Order.
A short but exciting week to end the year in the House.
The country is pleased that it's been able to get a new Prime Minister with a stable government.
The new Prime Minister, Bill English, and the stability of his government came under scrutiny from opposition leader Andrew Little in Wednesday's Question Time.
Given he now has four ambitious amigos, three resigning ministers, two brooding rivals, who's going to rescue Nick Smith from the pear tree?
The Right Honourable Prime Minister.
Well, Mr. Speaker, the basic difference is this. We have 59 members of Parliament. And that is a great deal more than that member has.
27 more than Andrew Little's Labour Party, but still too short of the 61 required for a majority to win votes in the chamber. The challenge for minority government that Mr. English addressed later in Wednesday's adjournment debate.
People forget, because this government makes it look relatively easy, it isn't, that we have to get votes for every piece of legislation that goes through this House. And I can assure the public and the opposition that the respect that is maintained within this relationship is based on the robustness of the discussions that are had in getting our solutions. And the Māori Party, ACT and United Future have played a critical role in stable government, and the stability of that collective was so ably demonstrated just in the last week or so.
But 24 hours previously, one of those coalition partners had crossed the floor to vote with the opposition on the first bill introduced by National under their new leader. The Māori Party joined all other parties except National, United Future's Peter Dunn, and the ACT Party's David Seymour, in voting against giving a first reading on Tuesday to the Children, Young Persons and Their Families legislation bill, also known as Aranga Tamariki, which roughly translates as child wellbeing. And making the well-being of the child the top priority of state care was the issue that split the House right down the middle, with the Māori Party co-leader Marama Fox among those disappointed by the bill's half-measures.
I thought we were putting the child at the centre. I thought we were listening to the child and making it most important that everything they need is contained in their care and protection, but only when it's practicable or reasonable. Or appropriate.
Marama Fox said there would be no treaty clause in the bill were it not for the Māori Party.
And for some people in the National Party, they might think that that would be better. But if 63% of Māori children make up the children in SIFs, if 63% of those children are Māori, if 71% of the children in prison, young people in prison, are Māori, we are the mainstream. The entire makeup, the entire structure, the entire rebuild of the SIFs needs to be done in accordance with Māori principles, because what's happened is a systematic failure where even the Commissioner for Children said some of those children would have been better off staying in their abusive families than going into SIFs care. In fact, going into SIFS care has been detrimental to them. More likely to fall out of school without a qualification. More likely to be arrested. More likely to be incarcerated. More likely to be abused in state care. That is double jeopardy. We cannot repeat this, the tragedy of the past. We cannot have a new stolen generation by removing links to whakapapa in this new design.
Marama Fox, the Māori Party's co-leader, was backed by the Greens' co-leader, Maturia Turei.
This is a policy that they know will have its greatest negative impact on Māori children and Māori whānau. They know that it will mean that more of our kids are taken and more of our kids will be unsafe.
And Labour's spokeswoman on children's issues, Jacinda Ardern, reminded members that the legislation they produced would be the guide to practice in the field.
And if the legislation purposely omits priority around kinship care, which I have to add is not just a New Zealand principle as much as that we've grasped it, it is internationally recognised and evidence-based because it reduces trauma on children. It reduces harm done to children. It is child-centred practice. And the fact that it is being explicitly and purposefully removed from this legislation is something we cannot support.
But the opposition was not all of the same mind, as revealed by the New Zealand First Party's welfare spokesman, Derek Ball.
If the tangata whenua were so keen on looking after their children, why aren't they doing that now? Why aren't they doing that now? This is the reason why we've got issues in this country in regards to the care protection of our children. I think that the Labor Party, the Green Party and the Maori Party need to wake up, come off their dream cloud and understand the reality of care and protection of our children.
While Derek Ball's New Zealand First Party added their 12 votes to the opposition's total of 59 against giving the children, young persons and their families a Ranga Tamariki legislation bill a first reading, they and the Maori Party did support it being sent to the Social Services Committee, where it will be open to submissions up until February the 15th. That select committee was one of five to meet this week, and while the bill wasn't on Wednesday's agenda, progress on setting up the government department being created to administer it was, as Anaya Ahu reports.
Officials from the Ministry of Social Development appeared before the Social Services Committee for their annual financial review on Wednesday, led by their chief executive, Brendan Boyle.
Joining me this morning is Gráinne Moss, who's the chief executive designate of the new Ministry for Vulnerable Children, or Ranga Tamariki. So Gráinne's been with us just a couple of months, and she and I describe it like a sort of a short-term marriage, that we're together until the 31st of March, and then we separate, but Gráinne takes the children. There's been no need for a prenup at this stage.
Gráinne Moss then brought the committee up to speed on progress in establishing the new agency.
We're very far progressed in the setup of an independent advocacy group, and I do feel that having that key lever where the voices of the children are there to hold us accountable and to tell us what they need and what they don't need is critical. So that advocacy group, I think, will be launching formally this week.
Ms Moss said they'd taken a social investment approach in establishing the new agency.
We've also consulted widely on the organisational structure. So it was announced, the final structure was released on the 9th of December, and we had over 1,800 submissions.
Chief Executive Designate for the Ministry for Vulnerable Children, Gráinne Moss, appearing before the Social Services Committee on Wednesday.
That report from Anaya Ahu. And the Social Services Committee is not alone in facing a new year full of controversy. The Health Committee, already flat out hearing submissions on its inquiry into public attitudes to euthanasia, also has a new bill transferring decisions on fluoridation of water supplies from territorial authorities to district health boards. Submissions on that close on February the 2nd, while the Local Government and Environment Committee labours under the weight of yet another massive report, this one a 500-page doorstopper on the Resource Legislation Amendment Bill, introduced over a year ago by Environment Minister Nick Smith of pear tree fame and containing long-awaited reforms of the RMA. Then there's other unfinished business, such as the recovery of the 29 bodies in the Pike River coal mine, raised in this announcement on Tuesday.
Petitions have been delivered to the clerk for presentation.
Petition of Dame Fiona Kidman, requesting that the House note that 511 people have signed a petition requesting that Solid Energy be stopped from sealing the Pike River mine and that the remains of the 29 men be brought home if humanly possible.
That set the scene for this question for the new Prime Minister from Mr Little.
Will he come with me after question time, have a proper meeting with the families, look them in the eye and tell them why he is ignoring their pleas?
The Right Honourable Prime Minister.
Mr Speaker, no, because that would be falling in with the Leader of the Opposition's view that there is a political decision to be made which may involve putting New Zealanders' lives at risk in one of the most dangerous workplaces, as we know, in New Zealand. The core issue here is to respect the distress of the families, but acknowledge that the decision about going in the mine is essentially one of safety, not politics, because that member would be the first to complain if more lives were lost because a politician overrode the law passed by this parliament.
And the focus on politicians and parliament as their workplace sharpened this week with yet another MP announcing their intention to resign mid-term. Labour's David Shearer, who took over the Mount Albert electorate from Helen Clark in 2009, bid farewell to the House before the dinner break on Tuesday, admitting that being leader of the opposition was the toughest job in politics.
And I can tell you, without doing it, nobody knows quite how tough it is. And of course, everyone around you is the world's expert on what you should be doing. So, Andrew, I wish you all the very best. I think you possess the personal qualities that this job needs.
After that endorsement of Andrew Little as his successor as opposition leader, David Shearer revealed what had prompted him to leave Parliament.
Mr Speaker, many years ago, some friends and I followed the Nile River on a boat down to Juba in the south of Sudan. And from there, we paid a Somali truck driver to take us for 4 days across the south of Sudan into Kenya. At one of the stops, we were in the back of the truck and we were peeling mangoes and throwing the skins and some stale bread we hadn't eaten over the side. And a dozen kids below us were fighting, we found, over our rubbish. It's probably the only food that they had that day. And it had a profound effect on me. It spurred me into humanitarian work around the world, and I've been privileged to work side by side with some wonderfully dedicated people. So when I received a call a couple of weeks ago offering a position in the same region, I didn't hesitate. It was, in many ways for me, completing the circle. My hope, as always, is that I can make something of a difference. And wouldn't you believe it, when I was in New York last week, I remembered I had a bank account there.
Among tributes to David Shearer was this one from the Attorney General, Chris Finlayson.
Speaker, can I begin by acknowledging David Shearer, who I think is one of the nicest people I've ever met in public life, and wish him all the very best for the future.
Mr. Shearer's departure, along with news of several more either leaving or thinking about it, prompted these comments from the former Clerk of the House, David Magee.
There's been some discussion recently about whether being a Member of Parliament is a job or a social calling. As a former Clerk of the House, I'm firmly in the category of believing it's a social calling. Obviously, members need to be properly remunerated for the job that they do.
Mr. Magee said midterm resignations, once extremely rare, had come back into fashion with MMP.
And it's now quite a frequent occurrence that members of Parliament resign their seats, usually on the list, before the end of the 3 years that they've been elected to. This Parliament, slightly exceptionally, we're facing three constituency members of Parliament who are likely to have resigned before the end of the Parliament, three minimum. 2 years of the Parliament and three resignations from constituency seats.
Parliament's former clerk would like to see disincentives to make MPs think twice about resigning early.
So for list members, I simply wouldn't fulfil the vacancy if a member chooses to resign. As I say, I don't believe list members would resign in the future if that was the consequence. For members who represent electorates, it is unacceptable to leave a vacancy unfilled because there is a constituency that needs to be represented there. We already have a rule that vacancies occurring in electorate seats within the final 6 months of a parliament are not filled. I think that's open to some objection on democratic grounds, but let that pass. I certainly wouldn't extend that rule. My disincentive as far as constituency members are concerned resigning from their seats is to require any constituency member to enter into a bond to serve the full 3 years as a condition of being declared elected to Parliament. That bond wouldn't cover the cost of a by-election if a member did resign, and that wouldn't be its intention either. But it would be a disincentive to the member and to the member's party who is backing the member for quitting but within the period of time of which they'd signed up by being elected to Parliament in the first place.
David Magee, QC, Clerk of the House from 1985 to 2007, author of Parliamentary Practice in New Zealand and the founder of the Today in Parliament programmes in 1994. Now the final word in this programme from the Speaker, David Carter.
To all members of Parliament, enjoy your break. When we return in 2017... I suspect we'll be in election campaign mode from the very start. The question is that the motion be agreed to. Those of that opinion will say aye.
Aye.
To the contrary, no. The motion is agreed to. The House stands adjourned to 2 p.m. Tuesday the 7th of February. See you later.
The Speaker, David Carter, I'm Tom Frewen, and this programme was made with funding from Parliament.